Today on CityCast Chicago, we're looking back on the last week of summer with the co-founders of The Tribe, editor-in-chief Tiffany Walden and publisher Morgan Elise Johnson are in the building. It's Friday, September 23rd. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is CityCast Chicago. Good morning, Morgan. Good morning, Tiffany. Welcome to CityCast.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I'm so excited. This is my first time on.
We excited to have y'all.
Morning. Happy to be back. This is my second time, I think, on here.
I love having both of y'all together. We love The Tribe here. We started the week Monday looking back at some classic jingles that still smack in the city with Chastity Cooper, who wrote an amazing story, which is why I can't get Adriana Furze out of my head.
Once you start, you can't stop. Like, no. It's just there for like 2 weeks.
Feel the warmth. And luxury that you deserve.
See, you adding extra stuff to it.
Right, I can't
song
help
not do that.
It don't, but you know.
Adding some extra sauce and some extra flavor.
We updating it. Morgan, yeah. Where are you calling in from this morning? And if there's a spot in your neighborhood that you'd love to visit, and when I pull up next time, where do I need to stop at?
So I'm calling in from the West Loop. And, you know, every day there's a new building being erected, more construction. It's getting very scary over here, actually. Oh.
You ain't got no place of comfort, no park, no restaurant or bar you like to pop into.
Our sub sandwich place.
Okay, D'Amato's is very special to me. Like that bread over there is just, it warms your spirit. Like those people know me in there. It's just like, please.
They got it ready for you. Tiffany, where are you calling from this morning? And what's the spot in your neighborhood that people got to stop by?
I'm calling in from Wicker Park. And one of my favorite spots over here is Dr. Bird's. Black-owned Jamaican spot. They have like they call it a dinner, D-I-N-N-A. I love the steak one, but you know, I'm trying to be a better person. I'm trying to stop with red meat. So I'm going to praise the chicken one. I'm going to praise the salmon one. But yeah, if you open this way around Milwaukee, like go to Dr. Bird's, that's the jam.
Hey, come on. Sandwiches, steak dinner plates, I'm loving it. Let's get into the stories from this week. It's a lot going on in the city of Chicago. Morgan, I want to start with you. What's a story that you want to highlight this day?
Well, our reporter, Tonya Hill, reported yesterday a story about city council and how there's going to be a major shakeup, hopefully. You know, there's a total of 15 city council members that have stepped down or somehow announced that they are retiring or launching a campaign to run against Mayor Lori Lightfoot, or in true Chicago fashion, they are getting indicted for random scandals and, you know, bribery or whatever. This story is called, Will the 2023 Municipal Election Push the Chicago Aldermanic Black Caucus Further Left? So we're very interested in watching the aldermanic races, seeing if any new progressive leaders will emerge.
Mm-hmm. And when we look at that list of 15, you know, a good amount of them are in the Black caucus. We're looking at, like you said, three who are retiring: Hairston, Brookins, Austin. You got Sawyer Jr. and King running for election. But as Tonya covered, what it means to be progressive. And so we know we're going to have turnover with at least 15 people doing something. But is that turnover going to move further left? Is it going to look more progressive? And so when we look at what it means to run as a progressive for city council, Tiffany, what does that mean? What are those individuals focused on that other aldermanic candidates aren't?
I think the SEIU president, Greg Kelly, like really raised an important conversational piece in the story where he mentions that, like, you know, we have to be careful when we're using the word progressive because it can rub people the wrong way. And I think, you know, we're in this age and this time where a lot of like Republican right wing people have taken the word and just made it a derogatory term. Mm-hmm. They've attached it to like, you know, this whole conversation about inner cities being lawless, cities with Democratic leaders being lawless. On the flip side, too, you have politicians like Mayor Lightfoot did in 2019 who co-opt that language and then just call themselves a progressive, and they still doing the same old that people were already doing.
Morgan, do you believe that there is a crop of young candidates who are thinking about progressive politics in a more holistic way, affordable housing, mental health, and the like?
I do think there is a cohort of new kind of like younger voices that are focusing on institutions that are nourishing institutions rather than punitive, rather than institutions that focus on punishment. So, for instance, they're saying, how can we invest in institutions that promote housing for all, healthcare for all, nutrition and food justice, environmental justice, things like that, that create safe environments for people to live and to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Tiffany, have you seen anything from the incumbent alder people in the Black caucus? Do you see them moving further left?
You know, it's kind of tough because even if you look at what Brookins said in the story, what Alderman Brookins said in the story, like he really believes that he's on the more progressive liberal side of things. Because he did, I mean, to his credit, he was a sponsor for the reparations ordinance for a lot of the John Birch torture survivors. But at the same time, you know, he turned around and he voted for the Cop Academy, something that organizers and a lot of Black youth, Black and brown and queer youth, were on the ground fighting so adamantly against. He voted for that. So it's one of those things where I just think we have to have new voices in there, because these people over time, I mean, I'm sure probably compared to folks before them, they might be progressive.
And I just want to add that, you know, this question about policing and safety is also an economic issue for a lot of people, especially older Black Chicagoans who, you know, they may be employed by the police department. Like, let's keep it real. Like, when we went to a community meeting that the city had that Mayor Lightfoot hosted on the West Side, she was very much promoting policing as like a job opportunity, a way for Black people to get into the middle class and, you know, acquire wealth.
Yeah. Tiffany, do you think people, with so many elections happening around us, mayoral, the governor's race is happening, do you think people even know how important the city council is to the daily functions of our city? And how do we work together to, you know, kind of make that even clearer?
I think the average person doesn't really know. I grew up in North Lawndale, and it never occurred to me that the alderman was important or did anything. You know, I just knew about the mayor. So even me as a reporter, I'm learning now a lot of these things that I didn't know growing up. And with all of these elections kind of happening at the same time, people may vote in the midterm election in November. And then you turn around and there's a city election and it's like, well, damn, I just voted. What am I voting for now?
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's very important for all media outlets to just make it very, very clear, like, what these different elections are, what the roles of these people are. I think that's really important for, in order to get the voter turnout that we hope to get this next time around.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to stay with elections here, Morgan. I want to move on to a story about Mayor Lori Lightfoot, right? You know, she was on BET earlier this week, but she's really been, we've been talking a lot about progressivism. You know, that word is popping up in a lot of her literature lately, a lot of her social media posts. Can you speak to this?
Well, it's election season, y'all. And we saw this once, you know, when she first ran for office, she very much co-opted language of young Black queer organizers who very much were organizing against her and who knew who she was from when she was the president of the police board. And then she got into office and all of a sudden the identity politics of I'm Black, I'm gay, I'm progressive, that kind of went out the door. We saw during the 2020 uprisings, the way that she used city trucks, salt trucks as weapons, raising the bridges,
yeah,
cutting
we just
off
got
access
bridges
to public,
raised the other day.
Public transfer. What can I talk? Cutting off access to cutting off access to public transportation, you know, all of this when you are really restricting people's access to downtown, you know, it's cop behavior. Okay, it's not progressive.
Morgan, you sent me a graphic, which is Mayor Lori Lightfoot's progressive accomplishments. And there are six key points on here: economic development and justice, neighborhood development, public safety, police reform, immigration, environment, and sustainability. Right? To the administration's credit, some of these things are real, right? They actually happen. But as you pointed out, a lot of them, like the Independent Civilian Oversight Board, these are things that were not won easy. These were not things that were just, you know, given to the city of Chicago or implemented on the back of this mayor, but were fought for after years and years and years of organizing.
And I also want to add in, too, I haven't had a chance to read it in full, but Crane's Chicago Business posted a story about Lightfoot's like premier platform, which is like Invest Southwest. Anytime you ask her anything about Black folks in Chicago, we always talk about Invest Southwest, right? None of those projects have even broken ground, and it's been 3 years. And they were all, there were like two projects, I believe the article says, that was supposed to break ground within 18 months. So I'm sure, you know, the conversation is going to pivot to her having to deal with a pandemic. But it's very, very crucial and important that we held her accountable about Invest Southwest, because the story talks about like a stretch of Chicago Avenue from Homebell Park going out west to like Austin, which is like a completely dilapidated area of the West Side and hasn't seen any development in like 40 years. And I guess one of those Invest Southwest projects was supposed to happen over there, and nothing has happened over there. So even in the BET interview, she's talking about we're going to be on track to meet $2 billion for this project. And we are seeing our neighborhoods be transformed. But the West Side looks exactly the same.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Tiffany, you have done a lot of work recently on misinformation, right? Whether it's the Safety Act, but a story you wanted to focus on today was regarding an iconic home in Austin. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, so I'm very into misinformation right now. I think we need to like nip this in the bud before we even get to the municipal elections next year. But recently, I think it was Chicago Media Takeout posted a picture of the pink house in Austin on Central.
Media Takeout is like one of those like social media blogs.
Yeah, like a hip hop and culture blog. They posted saying RIP, like, you know, they're demolishing this house. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. But yeah, everybody had something to say, and you know, everybody was distraught about that because it is like kind of a staple on the West Side. People pass it every day. And Black Club wrote a story saying that the house is not being demolished. What's actually happening is that they're doing some renovations. They probably won't be pink anymore. They're going to change the color, but they are doing renovations to the house so it won't be torn down. This is the second thing recently that has just spiraled out of control with these culture and hip hop blogs just posting whatever. We had the Safety Act, quote unquote, purge law. Misinformation was spreading around too. I don't understand, you know, why. I guess I understand why it's all about money, but a lot of misinformation about Black Chicago just continues to like surface and spread and resurface and
go
spread
viral. Yeah.
And go viral. And it's so harmful to the community when these things happen. That I just really wish it would stop.
I look at hip-hop blogs, hip-hop and culture blogs that cover Chicago, and it's so interesting how people have a trust for an anonymous blogger, but they don't have trust for people in the news who are visible and transparent. And we do our best to be as visible and transparent as possible, but we still don't have the following of a Chicago media takeout. So we're even like looking at ourselves and being like, okay, what are we doing wrong? Like, what are they doing right when it comes to reaching audience? There's so much media education that is needed. There's so much media literacy that is needed. There's so much more community engagement that is needed of us.
Having talked about municipal elections, misinformation, you know, I think we got to lead the people with some good news to get them through the weekend. Morgan, what is your some good news? I'm like, oh my God, I'm on today.
You have a nice vibrato, you know?
Like, was you in choir in high school or anything?
In grammar school, you know, and maybe a little musical theater between the ages of 5 and 15, you know, a little something.
Okay, yeah.
I love musical theater and music in general. So as we're bidding farewell to summer, which is my favorite season, my birthday season,
The whole season
is my birthday season. Yes, it is. But it's really been a summer of music for me. I've seen so many artists. Saw Janet Jackson in concert this summer, Jasmine Sullivan. Most importantly, my mother, Diana Ross.
Tracy,
saw
your sister.
Saw her at Ravinia, and it was the most beautiful, transformative experience. I've been obsessed with Diana Ross since I was a little girl and watching The Wiz over and over and over on repeat. And she gave us Ease On Down the Road. And I swear to you, I just lit up from the inside out. I did cry, and I told all my family that I saw Diana. And they were like, I'm so glad that happened for you. They all understand. We posted a picture and tagged Diana, and she included us in her reel. So
come on.
Her reel recap. It's yeah.
The, what, the so summer, we made the it summer to recap her reel.
Yeah, we made it to her Instagram reel. And so that's like officially highlight of my life, highlight of my summer. And summer can be over now. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that plus a Beyonce Renaissance party hosted by
you
the
taking
Black
all the good news.
Well, I'm sorry. Hey,
Tiffany, I'll let you talk about the pick Beyonce up with the party. With the Renaissance party.
Yeah, no, of course, Tiffany was there with me.
That correct. Elijah McKinnon I don't remember the whole name of the group.
The Black Jenna, a bunch of just like super fabulous, fine Black queer artists who run this organization called the Black Agenda. I don't really know all that they do, but they just pop up and give us fabulous experiences, I guess.
It started because Morgan was on Twitter just like, why haven't we had a Renaissance party in Chicago yet?
Was it me?
I think it was. Like, you tweeted that and Elijah came right up under your tweet and was like, hold on, please. And then like 2 days later, it was like, save the date. We're doing this party.
And so was the entire party like dedicated to basically playing the album on the loop and just y'all enjoying yourself with like drinks and small place? Like, take me there for a second.
We went to see Diana first in Ravinia, and we knew we only had a certain amount of time because we had to be at that party by 10 o'clock.
Did she happen the same day, Phil?
Like, it was the same day.
It happened the same day, so it was just like orgasm of good things that day for me. So we leave Diana, and we go straight to this party at Blind Barber, which, if you don't know, it's a speakeasy club in the back of a barbershop.
Yeah.
You know, it's dark lighting in there, red lights. There was a disco ball in there. Elijah McKinnon, he was the DJ for the evening, which meant that he just pressed play on Renaissance, Beyonce's album, and let it play all the way through. And we really danced the night away. And I haven't danced that hard in a club probably
years.
For like 15 years. I kid you not. Mm. this was just like sweating, dancing, singing at the top of your lungs, losing your voice, dropping it like it's hot, waving fans, voguing, just body rolls. It was just the entire time.
It was almost like I couldn't breathe at a point. And then like I had to slow down. And then Heated came on and everybody just brought out their fans. And it was just like, this album is insane. And we still had four more songs to go.
We were like, I don't know how we're going to make it through. We got to stop dancing. We got to take a breath. We got to drink some water. But, you know.
You said track 10 and on, we was fighting for our lives.
Yeah, for me, that was the last day of summer. And because I was listening to Renaissance every day, like 3-4 times a day, in the car, in the house, at Morgan's house, in the bed. Like, and I actually haven't listened to it since.
Oh my God. I'm gonna leave CityCast listeners with a little bit of some good news, and I'm gonna keep it brief because ain't no way to top that. If it was a summer of music and I got out to a bunch of street festivals, a bunch of block parties, it was also a summer of food. And so I'm gonna round out the summer this weekend at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park, and I'm gonna just be eating for like 3 days in a row. Chicago Gourmet Festival is back, and they're gonna have tacos and tequila tonight. They're gonna have the hamburger hop tomorrow. And then they're gonna have like a late night wine and like cheese and like spirits little joint on Saturday. So I'm probably gonna pop out to at least like one of three, two of three, and if I'm feeling good, maybe even three of three. I might need to spread the wealth to some other Chicago events, but you can definitely catch me at the Harris Theater at Chicago Gourmet, eating and drinking until it's time to come back to work on Monday.
All I want to say is, and I do want this to be in the recording, is that if Beyonce like comes to Chicago and has a party, please, 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 please call Elijah. That's the only way it would get done the way that it needs to be done.
Two of the co-founders of The Tribe, Tiffany Walden, Morgan Elise Johnson, thank y'all for making time for us over at CityCast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Before I let you go, with the close of summer means two things. One, it's time to break out the fall layers. And two, it's the end of our CityCast Chicago Summer Bucket List Challenge. I want to give a huge congrats to our winner, Annie. If I'm correct, she did every single thing on the bucket list, from the Baha Temple up in Wilmette to getting a sweet steak down in Gresham. To celebrate, we're having a CityCast Chicago happy hour next Thursday, September 29th at 6 o'clock at Midwest Coast Brewery in the West Loop. You can come out and meet the team, grab some CityCast stickers, some postcards, and have a drink on us. Invite your friends, and remember, everything is free. I gotta thank the people who make CityCast Chicago possible. That's lead producer Kerry Shepherd, producer Simone Alisea, our newsletter writer, Sydney Madden, our producer, Lizzie Goldsmith, the people who make the music we love, all the kimonos, Mark Greenberg of the Mayfair Workshop, and Sam Thousand. As always, my last appreciation is for you. Thank you for making time for CityCast Chicago. We'll be back in your inbox and your feed on Monday. I'll talk to you then. Peace.
Can we hit that? Some good news. I feel like I need to harmonize that. Like...
Of course. Come on. Y'all got to do it with me, though. All right. I'm going to go 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Some good news. That's how I'm going to do it. All right. So here we go.
Okay.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Some good news.
Now you changed the key. Did I? You got to stay consistent.
Did it move?